I'm a turning back the pages of time, and a dusting the cobwebs off of them old memories. And I came across this. I'm a thinking about the city of Clovis, New Mexico. Now, when we run out of money back in the early 1930s for me to go to high school, I enlisted in the Army as a saddle mule breaker. And I spent 3 years there breaking saddle mules. And in the summertime and then at night, I went to different schools of instruction. Try to fill out the places that I would have liked to have had to go into high school. And when I wound up that ball of yarn with the U.S. Army, I stayed there in El Paso and worked a year for the police department. And I'm just a-fixin' to go on duty there one night. Now, usually they put an old patrolman with a rookie to keep that rookie out of trouble. There wasn't nothing wrong with that. A radio sergeant raised up that window and he hollered out and say, "We've got a shooting down there on South El Paso Street at 9th and Mesa. Somebody go down there and check that thing out." Well, me and another rookie jumped in a police car and we whizzed off down there. Well, I'm doing the driving. I know the city fairly well. We slid up to that address. And the siren is just running down. But the red light was still a-whirling. My partner jumped out. He waltzed up to that door and he knocked on it. Well, there were 2 shots fired. And the splinters flew out of that door. One of them shots hit him just above the heart, the other one just below it. And I grabbed him, and he died right there in my arms. That old door drifted open, and there's a man standing there in the hallway with a .45 automatic in his hands, and it was still a-smoking. Well, he started to raise that thing. Well, I'd done the only thing that I thought any man would do under those circumstances. Well, I pulled out my six-shooter, and I buttonholed him just about from the belt buckle right on up. And then just a little bit, 2 more patrol cars come a-whizzing down there. Oh, when the smoke cleared, you know, and the dust settled, oh, they give me a carton of cigarettes and a brand new box of shells. And then I went before a grand jury. My very first time. Now, mister, if you're right, them 12 people on that grand jury can be the best friends that you ever had. But if you're not right, I think they'll find that part out, too. Well, when I wound up that ball of yarn, I come back to Clovis. And me and my daddy tried to farm around out there south of this air base on that old dry sandy land farm. Now, we hadn't heard tell of irrigation. Not back them days we hadn't. Well, you couldn't raise a fuss with a red-headed woman. And due to my Army experience and my police training, I managed to get myself a job on the Clovis Police Department. But it looked to me like about the only qualifications that you really did need was a number 18 collar and a number 4 hat. Well, I had myself pretty plenty of those qualifications. And if you wanted to become a member of the Clover City Commission, all you had to do is put out the word. You're going to clean up that Clover's Police Department. That's exactly what they would do. They'd grab up that police department just like it was a dirty sock, turn it wrong side out and drop it in the floor, and leave it to straighten itself out. Then they went on to the more important business, passing rules and regulations to tell the landowner and the taxpayer what he could do, and mostly what he couldn't do, with the property that he had been paying taxes on for 30 years. And that's the first time in my life that I ever seen the deep water Bible thumping Baptists and the bootleggers a-hugging one another. Them Baptists are keeping the Clovis, New Mexico dry, and the bootleggers are keeping it wet. It is hard for me to see that part of it. Now, that Clovis Police Department seen a lot of good officers come and go. They didn't stay all that long when they could see the handwriting on the wall. They'd run out of money. They couldn't afford you. Well, I went down in Texas and worked on the Monahans Police Department for a year. And a man that had been a Texas Highway Patrolman was our chief of police, Ragsdale, and he was a good one. Now there you could work with some honor and some satisfaction. And he let me attend schools of instructions and things. Well, I appreciated it. And then I transferred up to Kermit, Texas, and went to work for their police department. Well, that was another good outfit. You could work with some honor and some satisfaction. Now, we'd had a veteran law enforcement man that had got to be chief of police here at Clovis, John Droke. And there never was a finer old gentleman that ever walked God's green earth. Now, the extent of his law enforcement training while they was building the Clovis National Bank back them days on Grand and Main Street, he was the night watchman for them. But he was as good a wheat hauler, hauling wheat from a combine to the elevator, as anybody could ever hope to see. And I expect those parts of that law enforcement business that he hadn't got acquainted with. He called me in Kermit, Texas there one night about 9 o'clock. He says, "Printer," said, "you've got to come home and go to work." He said, "the bootleggers and the burglars is eating us up. Now, John, me and you gonna have to talk about that a little bit." I said, "these people down here in these oil fields pay a pretty decent kind of wage. A man don't have to hold his hand out behind him for some bootlegger to kind of keep him a-going." I said, "I can work with some honor and satisfaction." I said, "I'll tell you what you do. About 9 o'clock tomorrow night," I said, "you have Marvin Hass to call me." Well, I knowed who was running that outfit. The chief police couldn't even hire a dog catcher. So Marvin has called me the next night. He said, "Darcy, did you talk to John?" I said, "Yeah, I sure did." Well, said, "What do you want to talk to me about?" I said, "About coming home and going to work." I said, "Now, these people pay you pretty decent kind of wages." "Yeah," he said, "I know it." He said, "I'll tell you what we got." I said, "We've got a what would be considered a night captain's job. And it pays quite a lot better wages than a patrolman. Would you consider that?" I said, "Yes, sir, I sure would." Well, I said, "When do you want to go to work?" "Well, Marvin, just as soon as I can notify those people that I've got my house rented to. You know, I own a home there in Clovis. And give them people the decent kind of notice to vacate so I can move in. And I also need to give these people I'm working for a decent time of notification that I'm going to move someplace else. I'm going back to Clovis." I said, "Now, Marvin, I'm going to tie some strings to this a little bit." I said, "I think I understand your problem. But I want to work the first 30 days in plain clothes, boots and Levi's." I said, "I know where the biggest part of those bootlegging joints are." "Well," he said, "I think we can arrange that." Said, "And you get home and get settled and things." Said, "You call me. And we'll go from there." He said, "Is that a bargain?" I said, "Marvin, it sure is." Now, Marvin Hass was one of them kind of old boys. They only made one of a kind. They broke the mold when they made him. He could take a little bitty old skimpy budget and squeeze more results out of it than any one man that ever come to Kerr County. And the city of Clovis had the privilege of a city manager. If a man couldn't do the job, he didn't give him two heifers to help him do nothing. He found a man to take his place. Well, when I got home and got settled, I called Marvin at his home one night. I said, "Well, I'm ready to go to work." "Well," I said, "let's talk about it over the phone a little bit." I said, "The first thing I want, Marvin, is $300 in $20 bills. And right across the middle of that $20 bill, run that thing through a typewriter and put property of the Clovis Police Department." I said, "Ain't one man out of 1,000 will notice that thing. And when it come time for us to go to court and we shake that bootlegger down, we're going to find a few of them bills." And I said, "That will be positive proof before any court that we got the right man." "Yeah," he said, "I think we can arrange that." And said, "I sure do like that idea." Well, I said, "I need a man that knows how these bootleggers are moved around and things. Who have you got that can show me around in a plainclothes car?" Well, they said, "Do you know Irby Wilmoth?" I said, "You bet I do. He's a good man. A good, honest, and hard-working officer." Well, they said, "I'll let you work with Irby." Well, we took a plainclothes car, and Irby took me around to all the places that he knew of and told me the names of the different people that was running them joints the best that he could. Well, the next night I went out to my dad's place and borrowed his pickup. And I hooked my horse trailer onto it. I used to kind of cowboy around and rope a few calves. I loaded my rope and horse in that trailer. And we'd had a brand new patrolman to go to work for us. This is his first night on duty. I told him, I said, call your wife. Tell her we need her help. Now we went by and got her. Now we drive up there in that alley behind that bootlegging joint. And I'd kind of cut the wheels on my pickup and step on that brake light, light it up. My dad had just traded for this pickup over in Texas, and it still had a Texas tag on it. Well, we talk a little bit loud, you know, and I'd get out, I'd knock on the door of that joint. I said, say, lady, I said, we're fixing to go to Texas to a rodeo. And I said, it dry as a bone over there. I sure do need a quart of whiskey. Well, most of the time I could get just exactly what I wanted right there. But there was one time, about the second door down on one of them little old shotgun shacks, opened up, said, come on up here, cowboy. Said, I got what you want. Come on up here. Well, I made 16 buys off of them bootleggers that one night. Well, I took this old kid and his wife home, and I had a barn in the corral out at my place, and I put my horse up. And I went into Bob's Cafe. There's on the corner of First Street and South Main. And nearly all the railroaders eat there one time or another, either coming or going. And I'm sitting there drinking a cup of coffee and a-wondering. And kind of putting my notes together. It's a-getting about time to knock off anyway. And we had an old half-Indian boy that I went to high school with there in Clovis. This old kid was named Chief Long. And he didn't take but a drink or two of whiskey till that little thin veneer of civilization would shed off of him and he'd go on the warpath. Well, he was sitting in the booth just on the other side of me. Well, Chief didn't stand up on the floor. He didn't stand up in the seat. He climbed up on the table in that cafe and pulled out a long K-bar. He said, there's a damn cop in this town that thinks he can arrest me. I want to see the color of his hair. Well, that was just a little bit too much. I just reached under my coattail and I pulled out a .38 special. And I pointed it right square at his navel. I said, Chief, you drop that knife and you get down off of that table, or I'm going to shoot a hole through you big enough so you can ride a horse through it with your hat on. Well, now, he believed me. Well, I put the handcuffs on him, and I didn't haul him over to the police department and put him in jail. I walked him with that gun right in the middle of his back. And I said, old boy, all I want you to do is just make one damn move, and I'm going to send you to the happy hunting ground. Well, I wrapped that jail around him. Well, one of the night patrolmen took me back to my pickup, and I went home. Well, about noon the next day, I called Marvin at the office and told him what I'd done. Well, he said, that blowed your cover, didn't it? I said, you bet it did. But I'm not going to sit there in a cafe full of people, and about two-thirds of them knowed me, and put up with nothing like that. Well, I said, I don't blame you. It looks like you're going to have to go back, you're going to have to go into uniform for sure. I said, well, let's rock along and see. Well, I got 13 convictions out of those 16 buys I made that night. One of them bootleggers went to Amarillo and got in a shooting scrape and got killed. One of them went to old Mexico, and the sheriff's office gathered up the other and stuck him in the penitentiary. Well, we went to, the old saying is, closing the gate on them bootleggers. We had two very prominent and good lawyers in Clovis them days, for sure. Otto Smith was as fine a criminal lawyer as I believe I ever laid eyes on. He could get results. And Wesley Quinn handled all of the civil cases and things. But we had a young practicing lawyer just hung out his shingle right here in Clovis by the name of Dan Bazard. Well, he got all them old bootlegging cases, you know, and most of the divorce cases, such as they was. Well, he was a good lawyer, a good sharp one. He'd make you a hand if you had the money. Well, he wound up with them bootlegging cases. And we had such a audience, we had the whole court in the upstairs courtroom there at the police department. And that was located in the building where the fire department is nowadays. Well, now Dan Bazard done his best. Now, he represented his client, well, kind of by fair means or legal. But he made him a hand. He put him up a fight. And our old magistrate judge is the name of Manning, John Manning. And I knew there were times there that he was letting that thing go on way, way too much. A lawyer can abuse an officer or a witness if that judge will put up with it. Well, I was a-getting myself a whole lot of that abuse, and my neck was a-getting red. Well, the old judge found him guilty, and they just coughed up the long green. Well, some of them $20 bills showed up. So when he dismissed court, judge said, "Doris, come in here to my office." Said, "I want to talk to you." I said, "Now, judge, I'll be right back in just a little bit. I've got a little chore I need to do right out here on the steps of this courthouse." He said, "I know what you got in mind, but I'm not going to let you do it. I'm not going to say it don't need to be done, but I'm not going to let you do it. Said, you sit right down in here and help me drink a pot of coffee. We'll talk about that thing." Said, "Really now, that's my fault, and I'll apologize for it." Said, "I want to see just how you could or would perform, sure enough, under par." And he said, "I'm proud of you." Said, "You held your cool, but I could tell somebody was auguring for trouble, and it's going to be that lawyer." Said, "Now, don't you do anything like that. Said, it will cause you a lot more difficulty than you'll ever live over. I don't say it don't need to be done, but," he said, "I'm not going to let you do it, not right now." So we drank on that coffee, and I tried to cool off. And John Droke, our chief of police, he's called me into his office one time. He said, "Doris, there's a whole lot of people here in Clovis don't like you." I said, "Well, what am I doing wrong?" Well, they said, "They're sure enough a-knocking on you." Now, John, if I'm going to do my duty as a police officer and enforce the law, I said, "I'm not running for a popularity contest or anything. I'm doing what you hired me to do, enforce the law. What do you want me to do, go to looking off?" Well, he said, "There's sure enough a lot of people don't like you." Well, that made my mind up right there. I needed to change occupations. Well, I wound up about a year later, sitting in Dr. V. Scott Johnson's office. And I'm a-pleading with that doctor. I sure do need this new job. I'd accumulated a wife and a family. And I'd appreciate any consideration that you would give me. Doc said, now, Doris, ain't you working for the Clovis Police Department? Now, Doc, this all depends. I said, now, you know I'm a country boy. And I thought all them rules and them laws and them regulations was made for everybody, and that all men were born equal. But it looks to me like here in this town's politics that some of these here people was born a damn sight more equal than others. I said, Doc, I've just got through of putting a wrong damn bootlegger in jail. Well, that old doctor snorted just like a Bramer bull that had backed into a hot water. He pawed the air, and he cussed while you could have heard him plumb to the courthouse. He stuck that little old gadget in his ears and went to listening and a-thumping on me. And when he got through with that and was filling out that paper that I brought him, well, I didn't think there was a damn thing wrong with me that a good whooping wouldn't fix. But I didn't know too many men in the state of New Mexico that I thought could do that. And I said, Doc, do you think I'll live to be 100? And that old gentleman looked me right straight in the eye. He said, hell yes, your kind always does. You know, I thought about that a whole lot. What did he mean for my kind? Well, I wound up with one of them jobs as a predator animal hunter for the U.S. Wildlife Service in the northeastern part of New Mexico. And I guess one of them jobs is just made for my kind. I'd have been shooting a rifle ever since I was big enough to keep both ends of it off of the ground. And my mama said, you never did get the proper kind of raising up. Said, all you done was just run around over this place and grow up. In all probability, my mother was right. She usually was. Well, over the next 20-odd years that I was a predator animal hunter for the U.S. Wildlife Service, I had occasion to recall those reassuring words. The first bear that I ever killed, I killed him with a six-shooter, and that bear had got terribly close. And I've had a mountain lion or two to get all too close. And again, I'd think of those reassuring words of that old doctor back there in Clovis, New Mexico, that my kind always would. And I'd like to see him get just a little bit more credit of what he has contributed to Kerr County as a doctor, and as a man, a wonderful old gentleman. You kind of think he's a born with a bark on him, but all that was just to cover up a great big old tender heart. He loved humanity and he worked at it. A wonderful old gentleman. And just to think, it took that gizzard lip wetback we've got up there at Santa Fe, we used for a governor, and a mayor here at Clovis that had more meat on his head than a 4-year-old steer, to get him just a little bit of that recognition. But it did it show his picture? Oh, no. It showed that mare and that gizzard lip wetback. Well, that's a part that rubbed my fur the wrong way. And I ain't got over it, and I ain't a-fixin' to. Well, you've had enough out of me. I'm mad enough to bite myself anyway. Well, may the Lord bless you and keep you. And may you have a happy forever. And the old trappers never die. They just smell that way.